So when you make a primary key compound, if you wanted, if you'd already made it, what you would then want to do is say drop primary key, get rid of it, and then make it as a double. And I think in this handout, these are kind of key questions. And I think I have one in here that's the double. Only I'm not getting it, all right? So it must be the next one. No, I don't think it's that one either. Okay, the one I had, I thought, was going to do it. I'm looking for one where I've done the double. Autoline should have it. But it apparently. Okay, you think it's where?
I also went up there and said, right, yes, yeah, stop there now, so we were doing it for a key there. So up above, is that?
There it is. Okay, so I altered the table, so I had no key. I altered the table and I said add constraint, and I gave it the name autonomous item number to tell me that I had two keys. I wasn't telling it anything. And then I said primary key autonomous item number. So it then knows it's the combination of those two that's the primary key. And then down below, I am setting up my foreign key. So down here, I said, all the table online, add a constraint, order number foreign key, which is a foreign key into the table order number, orders. Okay, the foreign key is order number and goes into the key references orders. So if you look at orders has the order number as the primary key. Okay, so orders has a primary key of odd number. Okay, so I'm saying set up a foreign key, and again, you don't need the constraint name, that's all extra. The key thing is foreign key order number, and it references orders. So that means it's going to reference right into there. And then down below, just let me finish one thing. Down here, I said, okay, now from the alter table auto line and add a constraint, the foreign key item number references inven. So inven has an item number. Then has an item number, and it is taking the item number here and referencing into that.
Yeah, part of our question was, though, if we try to do the opposite, if we try to set up a foreign key on item number, referencing item number in order line,
can't
well,
do
we
it.
Couldn't do that.
Then can't
you
do
can't
it.
Do it. Okay.
Can't do it.
Okay. You can't do
so
it.
So even if I like broke them down and made them separate, I still wouldn't be able to reference them.
Well, we can't break them down and make them separate because you can't have two primary keys.
Oh.
You can only have one primary key. And if the primary key is indeed made up of two fields, then the only way you can set up a foreign key would be
it's
one
the link
that,
to
that,
both of
that links to both of them.
All right, so that's what the problem happens.
Right.
So what would be, I made three tables for the first 20. I needed, on the first table, I had the ID number and address as a primary.
Oh, wait a minute, let me bring up.
Okay.
Because we might as well, because if you have questions, I'm betting there's a few other people that might have them too. Okay, so what have you got?
All right, I made three tables. I made a customer table, a house table, and then a delivery table. primary keys were the ID number and the address.
I go with one or the other.
Okay, so you don't have to do both?
I go with one or the other.
Because that's my thing. Because then on the delivery table, my primary keys is two over there too. It's the ID number and the delivery.
That has to be. But you have to make them deliver, date, whatever. These have to be made together as the primary key. So you have to, when you make them the primary key, you
got
to make that. And then on this one, you've got something like a house code.
Yep, that's why I made my primary key on there.
And that's your primary key there.
And then I put the foreign key for that house code on customer table, and that was a foreign key there.
That's right.
Right, so that was the problem I was having, because you can't have, so I wouldn't be able to make ID number on the delivery table a foreign key because it's trying to go into the compound on the customer. So if I just take like the address out of the customer table.
No, that's right. If you take that address out, then that ID number can link in over to there.
Okay.
Okay.
Second
but
question.
But you can't have two primary keys.
Okay.
They can be a compound primary key, but they can't be two primary keys. And so
you can't make them separate as well.
You can't make them separate,
right.
But you can have a primary key that's two fields, three fields, whatever, but they have to have been made together as the primary key.
All right, my second question, how do you get a foreign key to show up?
What do you mean show up?
Like if you describe the table, the foreign keys don't show up. Like it shows like to not know that you made that a primary key.
And you say, how do you test it?
Yeah.
I thought that, the only way you can test it is to try it and see if it works.
Try to add something.
But you're right, you know, you're right.
You can't really
test it because what it's doing is background stuff to make the link work. And so you really can't test to make sure it's the foreign key that made it work because, in fact, it would work without having set up a foreign key. I mean, up until this point, we've made connections between two tables without having keys at all.
All right, so what's the best way to give this to you as an assignment? What do you want? You want, like, the code showing you that we made, like, the primary keys and foreign keys?
Yes.
And then just describe the table?
And then what I want is for you to give me, like I do on these, the tests that work and the tests that don't. So make a foreign key, and it's all along with everything, but then I ask you to test some things. So do something that doesn't work and, you know, explain it.
Well, I know that. I'll be done with the first question. I just didn't want to go on until I figured that problem.
No, that's fine. Anybody else got questions on this assignment? Because this, you know, is more challenging than a lot. Yeah.
How do you check if it's a primary key again?
Well, you can, there's really the only way you can check is if you see the not null show up, you know it's a primary key. Unless you also, you can get the not null another way too though, and that's by making the field not able to hold null values. And then that's another way. So you can't be 100% sure, but if the field that you named as a primary key shows up with not null, then you can pretty much make the assumption. And then you can also go in and look at the, whatever it's called, and I can never remember, the user table or whatever it is, and ask it to show not only the name, but the type.
I tried that, and I couldn't get them to show up on it. And I tried it a different way, but then I got all types of constraints from all over the place, and I didn't know what it was.
Okay, user constraints, that's what it is. So on this one, I just said, show me the table name and the constraint name from user constraints. For the table equal to auto line, and remember that has to be uppercase. It's one of those weird places where it will not work if you make that table name lowercase. Even though when you define the table, you made it lowercase, it still wants you to use uppercase
there. Yeah, after this assignment, I'm doing everything uppercase. Going back and forth is just getting tired.
So this one comes up and it's showing the table name. And I don't quite know why I showed the table name since I asked it to only do that table, but anyway.
But do you have to name it? Like, if you didn't give it that order number, item number, PK, would it show up like with the generic name that Oracle gives it?
Yes.
Okay, so it should show up.
It should show up either one. It's just, this gives me the reassurance that it did something with the constraint that I called the PK. So I'm assuming that if it did it, it probably did what I told it to do, if it created it. And that I made the two foreign keys that we just looked at, and it's coming back and showing me the two foreign keys. I think there's also a type, if anybody's got it open, do a DESC of user constraints. And I think there's a field that's basically type, that tells you the type of constraint it is. Because I don't have mine open, so somebody that's got it, do a DESC of user constraints.
Users or user?
User, right up here, user constraints. Do a DESC of that, and that will show you the different things that I'm pretty sure that there is a field of some kind that talks about type there. Did anybody see anything that looks promising?
Everybody's rushing to log in.
Huh?
Is everybody rushing to log in? I didn't log in.
Yeah, I could do the same. I was just being lazy. Okay, I went in the easy ways. DESC, user constraints, right? That was plural.
Yep.
So I've got the owner constraint, yeah, constraint type. Okay, so constraint type, if you do a constraint type on something, it should tell you whether it's a primary key or a foreign key. And I don't honestly know what tables I have out here that have keys in it, because I did the colleges one as opposed to PuTTY. I've been actually doing PuTTY again. But I've been doing it. And there's the constraint name and all the rest of it. So I'm guessing constraint type is. Do one of the tables that you put the keys on, somebody that has it open, and see what you get under constraint type.
Does that only have one character though?
Does it?
Yeah.
Okay, so if it only has one character, then what is the character? I would have guessed that it would be a P for primary key.
Right.
For some reason, I think foreign key may be an R. And I have looked it up before, and I'm trying to remember. Codes for, what was that called, constraint type? What are the letter codes in Oracle's user constraint table? Hello, can I just not do that, please? C, P, R, and U. I think R, I'm looking for one that doesn't make me do whatever. I believe R was, no. Type of constraint, okay. P is primary key.
Does anybody listen?
Check constraint on a table. There's a check constraint there. The C is for a check constraint. U is unique key. O will read only view. Ah, come on. There must be a code for a foreign key.
Well, wouldn't it? What is the R returning? Because it says. Yeah.
Right. And that may be that it gives you, is that what you get? If you've got a table there. Okay, try it now with a table where you put on keys and see what you get for the type.
Exactly, you put in?
You're putting in constraint type on the table user constraints and use some table where you've already put up the keys.
Yeah, I did it. It got integrity, constraint, and then the constraint name violated. So I've just used that word integrity, but that's the thing it has in common with the R.
Okay. I don't know if I have one out here that has keys on it or not. Okay, so that's got a not null at least. So if I say select constraint type from user constraints where constraint name, is that the right word? Am I using the right word? Okay, constraint type, I can't spell. Constraint. No rows selected, wonderful. Is it not supposed to be constraint name? Constraint name from user constraints. Didn't I do that right? Select constraint type from user constraints. Wasn't it constraint type?
You want it to be where table name is?
Where, say, table name is that? That's right. Thank you. It's not constraint name. Okay, so I got a P and an R, so the P is for primary. And the R may be for user. I think I remember that R is for user. Again, the problem is that, you know, this is, the foreign key is set up and it's working behind the scenes. And the best you can do is if you ask for it and it gives you the list and the list for the table, then you can assume that it's there, but however way you set it up. Any other questions? This handout that I was looking at, notes on key questions, is really just more examples. So here I put in select constraint name and the column name. Okay, so I can see by doing that that the primary key is on the department number. So if I'm asking for the column name, it's going to tell me what column the key is on. And the cascade clause is the one other thing I wanted to mention. The cascade clause is if I drop the primary key, means that the foreign key will be dropped too. Okay? So if I drop a primary key, the foreign key that links into that will also be dropped if I put in the word cascade. Because that basically says, you know, check all of the field, all of the tables that link into this one and fix them too. Okay.
So if you don't do that, what happens?
You may get an error when you try to go and add records and things like that.
All right, because it can't.
Because it can't do it. Okay, so you want to cascade if you have set up this web of foreign keys and primary keys, then if you want to eliminate a primary key, cascade will take care of all of the links to that primary key, and you don't have to go do it yourself. Otherwise, you have to go do it yourself, basically. I mean, it's like everything else in design. When you design the tables and when you design the keys, you go in and you do that up front. So in fact, this altar that I've been showing you is only because I already had tables out there. The best way of doing this is to do it at the beginning, set up the tables, set up the keys, get everything established, and plan to never touch them. Because if you start going in and manipulating those things, you know, you've opened yourself up. So those things need to be well thought through when the structure of the database is designed. You have to know what the tables are, what the tables are going to have, what the keys are, what all of this is, and then you establish, you know, the structure. Okay. So that is the cascading one. Okay, more on views has a few other little things in it, as I recall. If you want to create a view with different names than the data in the table, you can use the alias to accomplish this. Okay, so I said create a view from this table as, and I want item number known as item underscore NO, and notice that it, when I do that table, that view rather, it has those names on it. Again, think twice before you do that. It's a lovely thing that you can do it, but I go crazy if I start changing names on things and remembering what comes with what and what goes with what. So it's a lovely little thing that you can do that I don't think I've ever done, except in this example right here. If you want to modify a view, you use the create or replace. So it comes up and says create or replace. And that basically means that I want to go in, and at that point when I type create a view, it comes back. And if one already exists, it will ask you if you want to modify it. And if it doesn't already exist, it will set it up. Okay, so create or replace allows you to do either update the view or create a new one. So if you're not sure whether you've already done the view or something, you can do a create or replace, and it will come back and let you know. They also tell you that this is another way you can change the names. So they're saying create a view as select these things. And notice I'm giving the field names that I want in the view, and these are the field names in the table that I'm making the view from. And again, that's another way of making them different. Okay. You can also do a view with the where clause. So I'm creating a view as select, and I only want the records where cost is greater than 15. We talked about that before, but the view can have very complex wheres. And what a view does is it's a nice way to solidify a query. So I'm making a query that I know people will want to use every week, at the end of the week or something. So if I make it a view, then they can run the view and get the answer to the query, basically, if I put the query in as a view. Okay, so then they've got it, and they can run that view and get whatever output it is that they want at the end of every week, or something like that. Okay. So the where can be very sophisticated. We can have multiple tables. We can do all of those kinds of things. You can update a view. Again, this is one of those things that there's a cautionary note on, because I actually believe that you should update the table, and a lot of people agree with that, that you should only do updates on the table and not go around updating a view which has only part of the data from the table maybe, and you can get yourself in trouble. If you know what you're doing, you can do it, but it seems to me, and this was certainly said at the classes that I went to too, that it is better to update the files themselves, the tables themselves. So you can see that when I did the update of the view, it made an impact on the table. Okay, so I said, update this set item cost equal to 48, where item number is 2222, and you can see that that happened in here. I got the 48. Okay, so it updated the view, updates the data. Again, I think twice before I would do that.
On the actual table, that would be updated.
Yeah, on the actual table, it's updated. Oh, yep, the update, because say I set up here 2222 at a 23. I said update disorder 2, which is a view. Okay, let me see if I can find where I made the view.
No, what I'm saying is the original table will update it.
Yes.
It will update the table 2.
So here I did, I created a view called Disorder 2. Okay? Then I came down and I did a select from Disorder 2, so that's the ones I got. And those were only ones that were greater than 15, so that's why it's only a few things. And then I said update Disorder 2, so this is the view. So I'm saying update the Disorder view. For item 2222, set the cost equal to 48. Then I ran the view, and there's the 48. And then I ran the table, select asterisk from in bin, there's the 48.
Oh, so it does update it.
So it does update it.
Still better to do the table as opposed to.
I just think it's a better habit to update the root file itself, as opposed to updating the table that doesn't have complete data, and maybe there's something interconnected that you, it just, again, maybe I'm paranoid, but I like to just work at the root in the table and not update the view. But again, you can do it, and obviously a lot of people do it if they make it so that you can, but I do remember that the instructors I had when I was taking Oracle made that point as well, that they, you know, that they think twice about doing that. Okay, so there is that. And then if I go down and get rid of the ink, you can also put a constraint on the view and say check the constraint, and if they try to do anything that they try to go down and update some data that will change that rule that I said that view, I only wanted things where item cost was greater than 15. And then I'm saying with check option constraints, so that means that it can't do anything greater than 15. I mean, that isn't greater than 15. So I went in and I put in something for 18 and it went in just fine. And then I tried to go down and change, what was the field that I did that item cost? I went down and changed item cost to $14.99 and it threw it out. Okay, and said I can't change it to $14.99 because I have a check on it that says it can't be less than, I only want things that are greater than 15. So when I tried to put in $14.99, it threw me up. And then you can also, if you want to have users using this and you don't want them to be able to change anything, you can create a view which is read-only, which means that the users can run it to their heart's content, but they can't go in and make changes to the data through the view. So you've given the view to the users, they can do it, but if they want something different than what the view gives them, they're gonna have to come back to you to change it. Okay. And there's a drop view. Okay. These are mostly all kind of extra added attractions that you use occasionally. And this is one called sequence. And this is kind of interesting. If I have, for example, and I think auto numbers in inventory are the best example, because a new order comes in and you want to give it the next available number. But if you've got a system where there are multiple users from around the country, let's say, that all can place orders and you decide you want the order numbers to go consistently up as opposed to having them local based, you can set up what's called a sequence. Okay? And what a sequence does is it sets up a number that you can use in anything you do. So I did a create sequence, and I called it ID number. And as the sequence is using, I'm saying increment by one, start with 1,000, max value 1999, don't cache it in memory, and don't recycle, meaning don't add to the 1999 is it, don't make changes or go back or do anything. If I exceed it, yell at me instead. Okay. So I've set up this sequence called ID number. Okay. And here is the sequence. So it has the last number to be used was 1,000 because I'm starting out with 1,000. The maximum value is 1999 increment by 1. And so I said create the table, and I said the table is going to have on it an ID, a name, and an amount. So I've created the table. Now notice when I created the table, I did not associate the ID number with the table. Okay? I just just said create a table that has ID, name, and amount. And then I said, okay, you have a question? Question?
No, she needed to know what you know.
Oh, huh?
She needed to know what you
know. Oh, okay. So I now am saying, this is a table called test sequence. And I said, okay, and again, just regular tables, got an ID, a name, and an amount. But what I've done when I go down in the next line is I say, insert into that table ID number next val. So whatever the next val is on ID number, insert it in as the ID and then put in John Doe and 500. Okay? So I went down and did that and it then put in the 1,000 for John Doe, because that was my starting point, and this is the first record that I put in here. So I put in next val, which is 1,000, John Doe, and 500. Now if I say select ID number, current val, next val, from SysDual, or from just Dual, it shows me the current val is 1,001, the next val is 1,001. And when I use it down below, because I have put up the next val there, it considered that using it. So if you look down below, when I inserted the next thing, I got 1,002, which tells you that you shouldn't check it. Okay? Because when I check it, note when I put things in, it will restart with 1,002. If I'd simply referenced current val, I wouldn't have been messed up. But I use next val. I notice that I just messed up the sequence by doing a select on next val. So if I'd done current val, it wouldn't have messed it up. But since I use next val, then 1,001 got used. So I messed up by going in and showing that. Okay, so basically, if you go in and show it, and once the number is used, it's used.
Yeah,
you can't go back and write. It's used. Okay. So that was one of the things there. And I can drop the sequence if I want to. And I can alter the sequence to make things bigger. So here I made a simple one. I said create sequence and department number. So it's going to be called department number. I said increment by 2, start with 2, and the max value is 12. So I put in the first one, CIS 1500, and it got a value of 2. And then I put in payroll using next val, and it got a value of 4. Okay? And then I went in and I put in a few more so that I had up through 12, and then I tried to insert somebody. Okay, so I went in and I put in a bunch of these, so I went up through 12, but my max was 12. So then when I tried to use it after my max, it came back and said, you've exceeded the max value and it cannot be instantiated. So I can't do this because you've exceeded the max value. So then I have to go in and alter the sequence. And I went in and altered the sequence and said max, make the max value 100. And then when I went in and did it, it was happy and it put in the 14. So there's the 14. So it was happy at that point and put in the 14. So if you have something like this, a sequence number that you want to be able to use and have multiple users use it and not keep track of when you're doing data entry which number should be next, you can set up this kind of sequence thing and use it to get the next number. Okay. Which is kind of neat. I don't think there's anything new about indexes down here. But I created an index on department name. And then the synonyms let you create a synonym for an object. If you want to access a table owned by another user, you have to get permission. So I created a synonym test one for test sequence one. So now they have the same name. Okay? But if I want to make it public for other people to use it, I don't have the power to do that. So it came back, I would have to go to the administrator. So they have not given us the power to do that. That would have to go to an administrator. And the last one is a script, which we have used before. Okay, edit. Lets me write the script, and as I said, this is a good way to take in data entry. I wrote a script, I write edit, and I wrote the script. Okay, and then when I want to run it, I do an at sign and run it, and that's a nice, easy way to enter the data into the system. Okay? Because it comes back and says, please enter the ID number, please enter the drive number. So it's basically kind of the same as having a form with boxes to fill in, because it's coming back and asking that. And so the user can then can do the enter, and the insert goes in. Okay. So again, when you're making a script, you say edit, and you go into the editor. So edit, and you go in, you write the script you want, you save it, and when you come back, you run it with the at sign. Okay. And I think that's all I did there, is just show you the script. So, we are officially done with SQL. Okay.
PSQL.
Huh?
PSQL.
Now we're starting, yeah. Now we're starting actually PLSQL, for programming language SQL. I actually don't like the introduction terribly well. We'll look at the beginning of it, and then we're going to go and actually go in and look at if statements. So go to the introduction one. I'm changing the order a little bit. And more examples of inner and outer procedures we'll definitely come back to. So I'm looking at introduction briefly, and then we're going to look at if statements. Okay? And then come back. I did this in the order of the courses that I was taking. And I actually, as I said, I think it's better to go in and then come back because there's a bunch of the kind of that detailed kind of stuff in these first two handouts that makes more sense after you've actually done it. Okay, so PLSQL is a procedure language that allows you to step through the records and handle processing of individual records. Okay, so the big difference in thought process that we've had to do with SQL is we write a select statement for the query, and we have to handle it all in one command, number one. And number two, we're getting a group answer. Even if we're not grouping, we're still getting all the records that meet our query come out. We can't look at them individually and say, if the code is R, do this, if the code is S, do that. Okay, we can't do that kind of stuff in SQL. But when we use PLSQL, we can, because PLSQL combines SQL and gives it more power as a programming language. Okay? So, it's a block structure where each block performs a logical task, and blocks can be nested in each other, which is one of the things that goes on and talks about in this handout. That again, let's do a simple block before we worry about nesting. Here are the four parts that you have. You have the declare, which is optional. The declare allows you to declare variables, curses, exceptions, and we'll get into all of that. But it allows you to declare stuff. So it allows you to set it up and declare it. The begin is the part that is executed, and that is required. Because if you don't have anything to do, why are you writing it anyway? So it's required. You have to have a begin, and the begin is the executable section, and it does the PLSQL procedural statements and the SQL statements. So I can insert SQL inside this. Okay. Exceptions are optional. So I can set up all kinds of error conditions and handle them in the exception part. That's optional. So you don't have to do that. And then the end is required. Okay. So I'm going to go, and as I said, we will come back to this part, but that was kind of a nice layout of it. Here I did a simple declare and did something, but again, I'd rather go into the if one. So please go over to the introductory if statement. So I created a table called donor new that I wanted to be able to play with. So I said, create table donor new and select asterisks from donor. Okay, so I have the table. So now I am writing the program. Okay? And this is going to take a little bit of time. We're going to start off and we're going to say set verify off, which means that it doesn't come back at us with that verify line that tells us what it did, old and new and that kind of thing. Don't have to set it off, I just did. Then I drop down to the declare. And I said, okay, I'm going to set up an ID number, and I called it VID number, the variable ID number. And it is going to be a VARCHAR2 field, and it's going to be 5 characters long. And then the colon equal is the assignment sign. And this ampersand, if you remember, is for taking in input. And so I am taking in input and assigning it to the ID number. So I am taking in input and assigning it to the ID number. Right now, we can only handle one record at a time, one record. Okay, we don't know enough to handle more than one record. If we want to step through all the records, we need a cursor. And that's coming up, but it's not here yet. So I can only handle one record. So I'm taking in the ID number of the one I want to handle. And then I go and I say, okay, if they typed in 11111 or whatever they typed in, do a select from year gold into the year gold from donor new, where the ID is equal to the one they typed in. Okay, so I'm gone and I have got the total from the one that they typed in. Then I said, okay, if V year goal is greater than 250, then I want the year goal to be V year goal times 1.1, and I'm assigning it, colon equals an assign, okay? If you remember back to JavaScript, for example, 2 equals was compared to equal, 1 equal was an assign. Here, 1 equal does a comparison, but they use the assign as holding equal. So that means take what is on the right and assign it to what's on the left. Because V gold does not equal V gold times 1.1. But this is saying take V, your gold, multiply it by Y times 1 and assign it there. So I'm assigning it. And then I have the end if. So I've got a simple if there, and I can get into else's, but I've got a simple if there. And then I said, okay, now, and this is why I made a copy of the table, go and update donor new, set the year goal on it equal to the year goal for the record that has that ID. And I put my commit in, and I put my end in, and I set verify back on. Because it basically is courteous if you set something off to set it back on. Okay? Now notice the set verify off and on are outside PLSQL. Okay? So they are inside the code, edit donor zero, but they're outside where I've actually started with the declare. And so they're being done before, and when I'm all done, they're being done after. So, then when I come down and run this, I say, enter value for input ID. I entered 12121, and it went down and found that record, and I believe that person used to owe 400, and now they owe 440. So they now owe the 10% more. Okay. Now, all it gave me here when I ran it was PLSQL processing procedure successfully completed. Because I didn't ask it to give me any output, and we'll talk in a minute about how you can get out of probably not, but probably Thursday, about how you can get it to go out on the screen. Okay? And then to make sure that it worked, I had to go in and do a select from donor new, so that I could see it worked. Okay. PLSQL is really much more about things happening internally, like updating and things like that, than it is in preparing reports. It can prepare reports, but that's not its main function. Its main function is processing. Okay. And as I said, we'll get into curses shortly, and what curses do is let you store the table in a memory area and how they handle how many records are stored and when they go back out and get more and everything is up to them. And then steps through the records in memory, in the cursor, and that allows you to process each record. Okay. So, I basically want you to log in and try doing this particular program. If you want to change it, go ahead. But let's try going in and doing it. And I'm going to check and see if I have it here. Cannot find it. Actually, this is what you get. It didn't find it. I didn't know if I had it yet. It says, cannot find the donor file. Do you want to create a new file? And you press yes. Okay, so when you go into the editor, I typed edit, and then I typed donor zero, and it came back and said, do you want to create a new file? And if I say yes, then I'm in the editor, and I can start to create this file. Okay, so slowly but surely increasing the amount of your goal as I go. So I just typed edit donor zero, then I took my example here, copied it and pasted it into the editor, and then just ran it. There it is in the editor, yeah.
I can't connect the server.
Oh, good. Huh? It won't let you connect either? Is anybody, you're connected,
oh,
right?
I know what happened. So, because it happened to me. When we drove over it, it said that your accounts get expired and they have to turn it back on.
That's your own.
Yeah, that's what happened to me personally. That's why when I emailed you Sunday,
yeah, right.
I said I couldn't get on. I called, someone who was working on Sunday couldn't help me, so I had to come in yesterday, I came in yesterday, and they reactivated my account. Because there's a script that they have going on that after 2 years goes by or whatever it is,
that's what happened to me. Remember all the trouble I had last year when I was retaken?
Yeah.
Then it happened again this year, I had to go see what's her name and redo it.
But it makes sense but it doesn't make sense.
It's
all ran by a script.
It's all ran by a script that I guess they can't go in and edit. So basically, it kicks you out, and then because my email.
Should be able to go in and edit.
It's
the same thing happened with the email again. At the beginning of this year, I registered a student. I go into my email. I go into BCCX email. The script kicked me out.
Yeah, because what it's supposed to do is it's supposed to alert the people over here and say, hey, this person's account has been deactivated. And then when they get that note, they're supposed to reactivate it.
Okay, so how many of you are having that problem?
I don't know. My account was locked.
Your account is locked.
Yeah.
That's probably an ID problem.
It does something.
Are you getting a locked message, or what are you getting?
I'm getting your account is expired. Please contact me.
Okay. While you're working, the rest of you are working on it, I saw you had a question. See if one of them, I was just saying, I just emailed them during the class.
Okay.
That email again?
This is ITS at personalcc.edu.
ITS.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
say, go ahead down to the help desk and they will reactivate it. So just walk down to the help desk. He's gone?
Yeah.
Okay, because I was going to say him too. Has anybody else got this problem? Because if they do, they can go down to the help desk and they will reactivate. Saying, we have a problem here.
Well, that's what she told me, because it happened to me one day in class. I'm sitting here, and I logged into my email, and it was fine. And I logged out, and then before I left, I'm like, log in again to check something, and it's not what I didn't have access. So I went over and I seen her. She said, yep, that's true. She said, oh, you want me to take it? I said, one semester I tried retaking it and doing it, and you guys put me in as like a guest or whatever it was. Well, even though I registered, it doesn't kick that out. So the script runs you, and once it finds you, it throws you out, and you have to go in and go through the whole thing. So
okay.
I'm going to say, guaranteed, I'm going to get kicked out of this.
But at least now you know what to do.
Yeah. It's basically
okay.
Like JavaScript.
Huh?
It's a lot like JavaScript.
It's a lot like any programming language, really. I mean, you can see the SQL from in here, because I'm doing the select. Which is what is getting me the record or records of the other person. And I'm doing the update, and those are all happening with SQL. But the if statement that is checking to see whether I want to do the update or not is, or actually is doing the update anyway.
Rock
it's just
is
checking.
The first program, you're right.
Pardon?
Rock paper is the first program, you're right.
In this class?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I forgot
like 1.5. That's 1.5.
Yeah, no, but I thought you references.
Well, I don't know.
No, we did it in SQL, I think.
Right.
Was it?
I don't really remember. I just remember doing it in JavaScript. And Visual Basic.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was, Visual Basic.
So I'm coming in here, I'm doing the SQL, but I'm back in a programming language when I'm doing the stuff up here and defining the variables. Okay, because you don't do that in SQL. So I'm defining the variables, then I'm dropping down and doing an SQL select to get the data. Then I'm not in SQL when I ask the if statement. Okay, guys, my turn. I'm not in SQL for the if statement. So this is one of the pluses that PLSQL gives me, is I have the if statement. So I had the SQL up here, now I come down here and I do the if statement, and then I'm back to the SQL and I do the update, okay? So I am intermixing the things that SQL doesn't do well, which is let me decide that the year goal should be bigger for a certain group of people, okay, in here. Questions. Main thing I want you to do is get it running. Yeah.
Anyone else?
He left, but I think his was a different problem. I think he'd over typed his ID wrong too many times.
Okay.
They're
good. Those two are good.
Yeah. Okay. So you're in now and you're all set.
That's one of us I did.
Okay, we are done. You know, I just want you to try this, and then we'll look up here as well. Well, I'm glad you tried it, so now that we got you straightened out. But again, if you get time before you leave, take it in and run it just to see that I go in, copy and paste it into the editor, save it, come back out and run, and just see that it's working. Yeah.
So, when we're using something like SQL Plus,
Is that going to run, like, if we can run PLSQL through that, are we going to be running, like, MySQL through that, or, like, NoSQL, or do those all have different things?
We're going to stick to Oracle for now, because this is the Oracle class, and this is an Oracle language. Now, do other languages have something similar? Yeah.
Oh, so those are all completely, like,
they're
separate
different
entities?
Right. This is an Oracle product.
MySQL is different too, then?
Yes.
So PLSQL is part of Oracle?
Yes.
So those two basically stick together?
Yes.
Okay.
It's part of Oracle. And why is it suddenly deciding it doesn't want... Ah, come on. You've got to be kidding.
You have to create the table first?
But you have a donor table probably out there, so do what I did, which is create donor new. And I did that because I'm doing an update and I didn't want to mess up donor.
Yeah.
Okay.
It went from, I'm supposed to be...
Actually, I should be turning off the recording.